Hello, and welcome to Leadership Lessons with Liz from the Inner Circle Membership. Today, I want to talk about Stephen Covey's very popular book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Some of you may have read it, some of you may have not, but it's always a good reminder to think about these 7 habits and make sure we're putting them into play. So come along with me on the journey to see how we're putting together these 7 habits and make sure we're being highly effective people. The first habit is to be proactive. If you're reactive, then you're taking a passive stance. Reactive people believe that the world is happening to them. Could this be you? Do you find yourself saying things like, there's nothing I can do, or that's just the way I am, or one of my all-time favorites, that's just the way it's always been done? They think the problem is out there, but that thought is the problem. Reactivity becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, and reactive people feel increasingly victimized and out of control. Proactive people, however, recognize that they have responsibility or responsibility. The ability to choose how you will respond to a given stimulus or situation. Stephen Covey says it is our willing permission, our consent to what happens to us that hurts us far more than what happened to us in the first place. Otherwise, take control. In order to be proactive, we must focus on the circle of influence that lies within our circle of concern. In other words, we must work on the things that we can do something about. The diagram here shows 2 circles. One is the circle of concern, one is the circle of influence. Positive energy will cause our circle of influence to expand. Reactive people focus on the things that are in their circle of concern, but not in their circle of influence, which leads to blaming all the external factors and emanating negative energy and causing their circle of influence to shrink. So here's how I want you to practice being proactive in habit 1. Challenge yourself to test the principle of proactivity by doing this. Start replacing reactive language with proactive language. He makes me so mad. That's very reactive. Or I control my own feelings. That's very proactive. Convert reactive tasks into proactive ones. And if you practice this, it'll start to come much more natural for you. Habit 2, begin with the end in mind. We've all heard this, right? It suggests that in everything we do, we should begin with the end in mind. Start with a clear destination. That way, we can make sure the steps we're taking were taken in the right direction. Stephen Covey says it's incredibly easy to get caught up in an activity trap, in the busyness of life, to work harder and to be harder at climbing the ladder of success, only to determine that it's leaning against the wrong wall. Covey emphasizes that our self-awareness empowers us to shape our own lives instead of living our lives by default or based on the standards or preferences of others. Taking control, remember? Beginning with the end in mind is also extremely important for businesses. Being a manager is about optimizing for efficiency, but being a leader is about setting the right strategic vision for your organization in the first place and asking yourself, what are we trying to accomplish? Before we as individuals or organizations can start setting and achieving goals, we must be able to identify what our values are. This process may involve some re-scripting to be able to assert our own personal values. What is re-scripting? It's changing some of the basic paradigms that you have to recognize ineffective scripts that have been written for you and proactively write your own. It's also very important to identify our center. What is at the center of our life, and will the source be our security, guidance, wisdom, and power? If it's not, we want to rethink it. So here's what you can do to practice habit two. Challenge yourself to test the principle of beginning with the end in mind by doing this. Visualize in rich detail your own funeral. Have you ever done that? Who is there? What are they saying about you? And how have you lived your life? What about the relationships you had? What do you want them to say? Think about how your priorities would change if you only had 30 more days to live. And then start living by these priorities. That might be a little deep, but it's very important that we do this. Then break down different roles in your life, professional, personal, community, and then list 3 to 5 goals you want to achieve for each. And then what scares you? Public speaking, critical feedback of any sort? Write down the worst case scenario for your biggest fear, then visualize how you'll handle this situation. Write down, if you want, exactly how you'll handle it, or just go over it in your mind. Habit 3, put first things first. Stephen Covey says the challenge is not to manage time, but to manage ourselves. In order to maintain the discipline and the focus to stay on track toward our goals, we need to have the willpower to do something when we don't want to do it. So I'm going to push you out of your comfort zone. You need to act according to your values rather than desires or impulses at that given moment. All activities can be categorized based on 2 factors, urgent and important. So here's a matrix for you to look at. We react to urgent matters. We spend our time doing things that are really not important, but that means we would neglect the second quadrant, which is actually the most critical of them all. And that's our activities. If we focus on quadrant 1, which is our activities and our crisis, pressing problems, and deadline-driven projects, then our time managing crisis becomes bigger and bigger until it consumes us. This will lead to stress, burnout, and always putting out fires. If we focus on quadrant 3, we spend most of our time reacting to matters that seem urgent, interruptions, calls, meetings, when the reality is the perceived urgency is based on the priorities and expectations not of you, but of others. This leads to short-term focus, feeling out of control, and shallow or broken relationships. When we focus on quadrant 4, which are time wasters, trivial busy work, and some pleasant activities, we're basically leading an irresponsible life. And this often leads to getting fired from jobs and being highly dependent on others. Quadrant 2 is the heart of effective personal management. It deals with things like building relationships, recognizing new opportunities, and planning, preparation, and exercising, all things we know that we need to do, but seldom get around to it somehow, just because they don't feel urgent. In order to focus our time in quadrant 2, we have to learn how to say no. We also need to be able to delegate effectively. The key is not to prioritize what's on your schedule, but to schedule your priorities. Don't you love that? Plus, when we focus on quadrant 2, it means we're thinking ahead, working on the roots, preventing crisis from happening in the first place. This is helping us implement the Pareto Principle. The Pareto Principle, as we all know, is 80% of your results come from 20% of your time. We should always maintain a primary focus on relationships and results, and a secondary focus on time. Think effectiveness with people and efficiency with things. I'm going to say that again because I think it's so important. Think effectiveness with people and efficiency with things. So how do we practice habit three, putting first things first? Identify a quadrant two activity you know you've been neglecting. Write it down and commit to implementing it. Create your own time management matrix to start prioritizing. A can be, it has to be done today. B can be, it has to be done this week. And C can be, it has to be done this month. Create your own though. And after you create your matrix, estimate how much time you spend at each quadrant. Then log your time just over a 3-day period. It will really help you boil down on what's the most important. Habit four, think win-win. In order to establish effective interdependent relationships, we must commit to creating win-win situations. Covey explains that there are six paradigms of human interaction. One is win-win, where obviously both people win. Win-lose, if I win, you lose. Lose-win, I lose and you win. Lose-lose, nobody comes out good on that one. Win, what matters is that they get what they want, and win-win or no deal, which means we're either going to reach an agreement that is mutually beneficial or we're going to agree on nothing. So let's walk through those. The best option, of course, is to create win-win situations. With win-lose or lose-win, one person will not get what he wants for the moment, but the results will negatively impact whatever relationship you have. The win-win or no-deal option is important to use as a backup, but when we have no-deal as an option, it liberates us from needing to manipulate people and push over our own agenda. So keep that in mind and use that as a backup. In solving for win-win, I want you to consider two factors, consideration and courage. To go for win-win, you not only have to be nice, but you have to be courageous. And you can be nice and courageous at the same time. When it comes to interpersonal leadership, the more genuine our character is, the higher our level of proactivity. The more committed we are to a win-win situation going into it, the more powerful our influence will be. So when we want to achieve win-win, keep the focus on results. Begin with the end in mind, remember? Lastly, the spirit of win-win can't survive in an environment of competition. As an organization, we need to align our reward system with goals and values and have the systems in place so that we can support the win-win. Now, let's start thinking about win-win situations on challenges. Think about an upcoming interaction where you'll be attempting to reach an agreement or solution. Write down a list of what the other person is looking for. Then write a list next to that of how you can make an offer to meet those needs. Then I want you to identify three important relationships in your life. Think about what you feel the balance is in each of those relationships. Do you give more than you take, or do you take more than you give? I want you to write down 10 ways to always give more than you take with each one. Then deeply consider your own interaction tendencies. Are they typically win-lose, and how does that affect your interaction with others? Can you identify the source of that approach and determine whether or not this approach serves you well in your relationships? Next, seek first to understand, then to be understood. Before we can offer advice, suggest solutions, or effectively interact with other people in any way, we must deeply understand them and their perspective through empathetic listening. So let's say you go to an optometrist and tell him that you've been having trouble seeing clearly. He takes off his glasses, hands them to you, and says, "Here, try these. They've been working for me for years." Of course, you put them on, but they only make the problem worse. What are the chances you'd go back to that optometrist? Unfortunately, as I use that as an example, we do the same thing in our everyday interactions with others. We prescribe a solution before we diagnose the problem. We don't seek to deeply understand the problem first. You've spent years of your life learning how to read and write, years learning how to speak. But what about listening? I always like to say that God gave us two ears and one mouth for a reason. We can't simply use one technique to understand someone. In fact, if a person senses that we're manipulating her, she will question our motives and will no longer feel safe opening up to us. Have you ever felt this way? To listen empathetically requires a fundamental paradigm shift. We typically seek first to be understood. Most people listen with the intent to reply, not to understand. At any given moment, they're either speaking or preparing to speak. Instead, we need to be listening to what people are saying with the intent to understand, both intellectually and emotionally. Stephen Covey points out communication experts estimate that 10% of our communication is represented by our words, 30% by our sounds, and 60% by our body language. When we listen autobiographically, with our own perspective as our frame of reference, we tend to respond in one of four ways. We'll evaluate, we'll probe, we'll advise, or we'll interpret. But if we replace these types of response with empathetic listening, you'll see dramatic results in improved communication. It takes time to make the shift, but it doesn't take nearly as long to practice empathetic listening as it does to back up and correct misunderstandings. So the second part of Habit 5 is then be understood, and this is equally critical in achieving win-win situations. When we're able to present our ideas clearly and in the context of a deep understanding of the other person's needs and concerns, we will significantly increase the credibility of our ideas. So let's talk about how to practice success habit 5. Next time you're watching two people communicate, cover your ears and watch. What emotions are being communicated that might not come across through words alone? Was one person or the other more interested in the conversation? And then think about or write down what you've noticed. Next time you give a presentation, root in it empathy. Begin by describing the audience's point of view in great detail. What problems are they facing? How is what you're about to say offering a solution to their problem? That's what they are looking for. Habit 6, synergize. By understanding and valuing the differences in another person's perspective, we have the opportunity to create synergy, which allows us to uncover new possibilities by being open and creative. The combination of all the other habits prepares us for Habit 6, which is the habit of synergy. When 1 + 1 = 3 or more, when the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. So if you plant two plants close together, what are their roots going to do? They'll co-mingle and improve the quality of soil so that both plants will grow better than they would each on their own. Synergy allows us to create new alternatives and open new possibilities. It allows us as a group to collectively agree to ditch the old scripts and write new ones. Without a doubt, you have to leave the comfort zone of base camp and confront an entirely new and unknown wilderness. Push yourself out of your comfort zone. So how can we introduce synergy to a given situation or an environment? It starts with habits 4 and 5. Think win-win and seek first to understand. Once you have these in mind, you can pool your desires with those of the other person or group, and then you're not on opposite sides of the problem. You're together on one side. You're looking at the problem and understanding all the needs and working to create an alternative that will meet them. What we end up with is not a transaction, but a transformation. Both sides get what they want, and they build their relationship in the process. So when we put forth a spirit of trust and safety, we will prompt others to become extremely open and feed on each other's insights, ideas, and create synergy. The real essence of synergy is valuing differences, emotional, mental, and psychological, between people. After all, if two people have the same opinion, one is unnecessary, right? When you become aware of someone's different perspective, we can say, good, you see it differently. Now help me see what you see. We seek first to understand, and then we find strength and utility in those different perspectives in order to create new possibilities and win-win results. The key to valuing differences is to realize all people see the world not as it is, but as they are. Think about that. So here are some ways to allow you to practice synergy. Value the differences in other people as a way to expand your perspective. Sidestep negative energy and look for the good in others. I promise if you look hard enough, you'll find it. Exercise courage in interdependent situations so that you're open and encourage others to be open. Catalyze creativity and find a solution that will be better for everyone by looking for a third alternative. So here are some ways to practice Success Habit 6, Synergy. Make a list of people who irritate you, or just think about it, and just choose one person. How are their views differently? Now put yourself in their shoes for 1 minute. Think and pretend how it feels to be them. Does it help you understand them any better? Now, next time you're in a disagreement with that person, try to understand their concerns and why they disagree with you. The better you can understand them, the easier it's going to be to change their mind, or maybe change yours. Then make a list or think about people whom you get along well with. Now choose one person out of that list. How are their views different? And think about a situation where you had excellent teamwork and synergy. And why was that? What conditions were met to reach such fluidity in your interactions? And how can you recreate them in other conditions and opportunities? Our last habit, sharpen the saw. To be effective, we must devote the time to renewing ourselves physically, spiritually, mentally, and socially. Continuous renewal allows us to synergistically increase our ability to practice each habit. So our last habit is focused around renewal, or taking time to sharpen the saw. It surrounds all of the other habits and makes each one possible by preserving and enhancing your greatest asset, which of course is yourself. There are four dimensions of our nature, and each must be exercised regularly and in balanced ways. The first one is physical dimension. To renew ourselves physically, you must eat well, get rest and relaxation, and exercise on a regular basis. You've heard the old saying, we are what we eat. So if you're eating a big lunch and you're tired and you're exhausted, that's only going to show that you need to eat less. Focusing on the physical dimension helps to develop habit one, muscles of proactivity. We act based on the value of well-being instead of reacting to the forces that keep us from fitness. So push yourself a little out of your comfort zone and start doing this and see how that works for you. Next is the spiritual dimension. The goal of renewing our spiritual self is to provide leadership to our life and reinforce your commitment to our value system. It doesn't matter which higher power you believe in, but renew yourself spiritually. Practice mediation. meditation, communicate with nature, and immerse yourself in great literature or music. Spiritually, take care of yourself. It helps us practice habit 2 as we continuously revise and commit ourselves to our values so we can begin with the end in mind. Next is the mental dimension. The goal of renewing our mental health is to continue expanding our mind. Read good literature, keep a journal of your thoughts, experiences, and insights, and limit television watching to just programs that enrich your life and mind. Now, it's okay every now and then to watch mindless entertainment because we need that too. But focusing on our mental dimension helps us practice habit 3 by managing ourselves effectively so we can maximize the use of our time and our resources. Social and emotional dimension. The goal of renewing ourselves socially so that we can develop meaningful relationships. Seek to deeply understand other people. Make contributions to meaningful projects that improve the life of others. Paying it forward, giving back to others. Find something that you're passionate about so that you'll enjoy doing it and feel good about doing it. And maintain an abundance mentality so you can seek to help others find success. Renewing our social and emotional dimension helps us practice habits 4, 5, and 6 by recognizing that win-win solutions can and do exist, seek to understand others, and finding mutually beneficial third alternatives through synergy. Not a day goes by that we can't at least serve one another human being by making deposits of unconditional love, the giving back and paying it forward. The more we see people in terms of their unseen potential, the more we can use our imagination rather than our memory. So as we focus on renewing ourselves along these 4 dimensions, we must also seek to be a positive scripture for other people. We want to look to inspire others to a higher path by showing them that we believe in them and by listening to them empathetically and encouraging them to be proactive. So think about that as you sharpen the saw. The real beauty of habit 7 is that improvement is one habit synergistically that increases our ability to improve the rest. Renewal is the process that empowers us to move along an upward spiral of growth and change, of continuous improvement. Here's some ways to practice sharpening your saw. Make a list or think about activities that would help you renew yourself along each of the 4 dimensions we talked about. Select one activity for each dimension and list it as a goal for the coming week. At the end of the week, evaluate your performance. What led you to succeed or fail when trying to accomplish this goal? Next, commit to writing down or thinking about a specific sharpen-the-saw activity in all 4 dimensions every week, to do them and to evaluate your performance and your success so that you're constantly thinking about the 7 habits. I'm so glad you joined me today. And if you haven't read the book, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, there's no reason to go out and buy it because I just summed it up for you in this presentation. Feel free to print this or just save it so that you can go back and look at the 7 habits and make sure you're using them on a daily, weekly, and monthly basis. Thanks for joining me today with The Inner Circle, and I look forward to seeing you next time.
7 Habits of Highly Effective People, which we're going to talk today on our Leadership Lessons with Liz.